Station number 21053, Walter or Wally Shea, Reel 1.
Wally Shea, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
London, Walthamstow, London.
Which year was this?
When was it?
Which year was this?
Yeah, 1923.
Did both your mother and father come from Walthamstow?
Not from Walthamstow. One from, North London and Walthamstow, East London.
What did your father do for a living?
He was what they call a marine dealer. In other words, in those days, of his days, they had to make money, any money they could. It's a kind of dealing in metals and scrap metals and things. What they did in those years, in the, I don't know, because he died when I was five, so I hardly knew him. He died. He was badly wounded in the First World War. He had one leg. Yes, I'm with King's Royal Rifle Corps, and he lost his leg and was badly wounded in his side, and he died at the age of 38, some years after the war. My mother was a widow with us three children, and we had nothing. She had nothing to, so we survived with nothing.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Walthamstow?
Yes, I did. And secondary education, which they, not secondary, elementary education, which as you know is the lowest form of education. But we survived.
Which school did you go to there?
I went to a school called Wood Street School in Walthamstow, and then at the age of 11 went to Chapel End School, Walthamstow, until the age of 14 when I left to go to work.
What job did you get?
I was a barrister's clerk in the Temple, and then I enlisted for the army.
Had you been in TA before the war?
No, I was too young for that.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did. I was in with my mother in the kitchen, and I heard it, and I can hear it now distinctly. It happened.
How did you feel about the news?
Well, I was young and it had no meaning to me, really. I was only, 15, 16 or something like that. And it didn't have a lot of meaning, not as it would for to older people.
How did your mother react?
I can't remember, really. She must have decided she wasn't a demonstrative woman, but losing her husband when she was about 21 years of age, when she was 31 years of age, she must have had some thoughts.
Did the war affect you at first?
No, not really. I mean, we took things at the early stage in our stride, as I remember it. And we went to work and did everyday thing. And I joined the Home Guard when I was 15 or 16, before I joined the army, obviously. And most of the others were older men who was First World War veterans, you know, and some young boys like us.
What was the name of your Home Guard unit?
It was the Essex Battalion, God, I forget the actual number now, but it was an Essex Battalion.
And did you meet in Walthamstow?
Yes. We used to go to an old house, which is now pulled down. And then we used to go out to the countryside, Waltham Abbey and places, and they had a tripod machine gun. I was on the tripod machine gun, which was great, you know. I was going to stop the war just on my own. And that's what we did, and we patrolled looking for parachutists and people like that.
Whereabouts was this old house?
The old house was in a part of Walthamstow, in the better part of Walthamstow, called Hyams Park, which the bit more upmarket, you know. And it was an old house from the 1700s, which now is gone, and actually a council property on it. And we used to meet there, used to go there, and do our duty, sort of thing, you know, though we were only young.
Was it all young people in your unit?
No, there was some old men, men, as I say, of the First World War, veterans with medals and things, you know, but, and they'd seen it all, and they were really a guide to us, you know, being young boys. That's what it was.
What kind of things did you learn with the Home Guard?
Well, I learnt that experience of the older people that they showed us. But mind you, as you know, that young men of our generation were more disciplined. So, naturally being more disciplined anyway, even as young boys, it didn't come hard. It wasn't hard because we already had the discipline from school and from everywhere else, you know.
What kind of machine gun was this that you...
It's a Browning, a water-cooled Browning, American Browning, of the First World War.
Did you have any experience on any other weapons?
I had a rifle. We all had a rifle, of course, which we used to take home and kept it at home with us. And then when we went on duty, we'd go with it, you know, obviously take it with us to the headquarters.
Did you have any guard duties?
Yes, be on guard duty a couple of times a week, and also on all night outside in the countryside at Epping and Nazing and Epping and near Harlow, areas like that, looking parachutist in case.
Did you personally think the Germans would invade?
Didn't give it a thought, really. As a youngster, it was more of a... How can I put it? An experience, I suppose. You know, it was a bit of fun, really. And I don't mean it was funny, but it was fun to a young lad. I mean, at that age, they're still at school today, aren't they?
Yes. Would you at this time listen to wireless?
Yes.
What kind of things would you listen to?
Well, I used to like music, dance music, Glenn Miller and Tommy Dorsey, the Americans, and also our own people. And also programs like ITMAR, you know, the old comedy programs, and any program, really, that was of interest, you know. And because we used to hear the war reports and so forth, and took it in. But as a youngster, you don't have the same interpretation as of the older people, do you?
Any experience of German bombing?
Yes. I used to work in the Temple in London, and I used to go every day by a train to Liverpool Street Station. Where I worked, the top of Fleet Street at the Temple, you probably know where it is. I used to work near the Temple Church, which is the nearest part to Fleet Street. And of course, there'd been bombing during that night, any night sort of thing. And the church had been not hit by heavy, but put on fire, but they contained it. So fortunately, it was, and it's a very old church, obviously. And I used to get off the train at Liverpool Street and walk up to the bus at number 911 that took us to Fleet Street. If it wasn't running, I had to walk all that distance through, the firemen still with their hoses on blazing buildings and all water all over the place, and you're going to work. It seems unbelievable, really. You still went to work. And the night before had been horrendous, you know, but you just did it. And there'd be firemen would still be there. All night they'd been there. And you got to work. You wondered if your office or building was there. It was. And that was it. And you came home at night. And when I came home one night, the Germans had strafed along the street, main street. Strafed along and dropped bombs all along the main street. And at the bottom of my road, just to the right, at the bottom of my road, the bomb went through a main road, or, well, a B road, and B big hole there and a big chunk of concrete, about 3 foot by 3, came through my roof where my mum, where we lived. Fortunately, that's all it was. So, and that other parts went elsewhere. And my two cousins who lived three roads away, two girls, aged 13 and 11, were killed.
What was your address at that time?
My actual address, Woodlands Road, Walthamstow. Woodlands Road, Walthamstow, East 17, London.
Remember the number?
Number 10.
Did Walthamstow get much bombing?
It got its share. The real bombing was the east end, of course, whereas Walthamstow is on the outer, is near the Epping Forest. But yes, we you know, as I say, my two cousins were killed. And that was rather sad because there was a raid. We used to go down the shelter. That's before, obviously, I was in the army. And then the bombing took place in the night. Well, that morning, my mother used to work on the railway as a cleaner. And she came home on the first, and she was agitated, and she said the bombs dropped around the other roads, and it's hit the houses where our cousins lived and my aunt and so forth. And what tragically happened was that they were in the shelter, the bomb dropped on their house and houses there, and in the Anderson shelter was my aunt, my two cousins, aged 13 and 11, girls, two girls, and a baby in arms with my aunt, and an old lady from next door. And when the daylight came, they got out. The two girls went first, and the old lady went with them, and the three of them went into a chasm, just disappeared. My aunt stayed in with the baby, and she survived. And they, what happened was, in that particular instance, was that those old houses were built on a stream. They found that the stream ran underneath there to the River Lee, eventually into the Thames. So it's tragic. And a few days later, they found the one body of the youngest girl, and they never found the old lady, and they never found my other cousin. Lovely girls, 13 years old and 11. And the oldest one was buried with my father, and the youngest one was never seen. She was washed away. Probably went out to sea, maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
So it was an enormously deep hole.
The whole thing evidently had gone, and then filled in, I suppose, as, you know, sort of like, not complete fill, but going in, sort of filling in, and they go down. And as I say, they managed to find the body of one. They never found the old lady, and they never found the other one. And of course, that's actually, it's in the archives of Walthamstow's archives about it, and amongst other things, you know.
What was their name?
Their name was Riley. Riley. The father was Irish and her mother English, you know, and well brought up family. Lovely girls, lovely family. And
what was public morale like during the Blitz?
Not bad, considering bloody good, you know, I mean, the spirit was there. What they call the bulldog spirit, isn't the bulldog breed? And it's true, we're a tough breed, you know. We're a tough breed.
Did you think the Germans might win the war?
Didn't give it a thought, no. They would never win it, never. Just didn't think of defeat. What I hear now, we were so hairbreadths of, what's it? No, didn't. They would never win it. They'd never beat us. It just wouldn't happen.
Was there any hatred of the Germans?
Was it? Well, yes, I would say there was hatred of Germans then. but I have no hatred towards the Germans or the German army. The German army as such, I'm talking about the German army, not the SS and the Gestapo, those people. I'm talking about the soldiers. I don't hate the German army. In fact, I have an affinity with them, really. They suffered the same as we did.
Any other memories from the time before you went into the army?
Well, I say home guard, and I used to go to night school to learn shorthand and typing, and because that had to stop because the war came. But other than that, we had nothing. If you understand what I'm saying, we didn't get anything. I mean, my mother was a widow, so and she got. When she couldn't work, she got 10 shillings a week to keep all of us. That was, you know, to pay the rent and food, which was nothing really, you know, 10 shillings a week. She got no war pension for some reason. So she had to bring our three children up on nothing, and she did a marvellous job.
Did you ever have to go without?
All the time. All the time.
What type of things would you be deprived of?
Well, not much food, no toys, never went on holiday, never had a holiday in your life. Used to look in shop windows, talking about before I started, and you see the sweets and everything in there, but you never had it. You just didn't have it. I mean, that was the way of our lives, some of us. And that's what makes us what we are today. Whether it's a good thing or not, I don't know. But we had nothing. And I mean, I'm saying nothing, I virtually mean nothing, you know. There wasn't. With a widowed mother to bring up three kids, and there were others like it. You know, that. But you enjoyed yourself in your own way. You know, you had no father. And you got on with life. You didn't want or you didn't ask your mother anything because she didn't have it. You just didn't do it. You didn't have anything.
Now, can you tell me about joining up, please?
Yes, I enlisted in the army in 1941. I was 17.
Were you called up?
I joined, volunteered.
Why did you decide to volunteer?
To be a hero.
How did you go about it?
Went to the local drill hall, signed the thing, and then was recalled for medical. And then after that, got the calling up papers as such, and was posted to Lark Hill on Salisbury Plain in the field artillery.
Did that suit you?
It was quite good. I enjoyed that. The discipline I found easy because the life we had lived before as children, which was hard. So the army, at least we had food more, you know, regular. And being the army, you made good friends. You saw things.
Had you asked to go into field artillery?
No, it went to the field artillery. They gave you, do they call it an aptitude test, is it? An aptitude test, and you did certain things. And I think according to how uneducated or educated you are, they selected you for certain outfits, you know. Unfortunately, a lot of the lads who didn't pass the certain test like that, they were obviously in the infantry.
How did you get on with basic training at Lark Hill?
Very good. It was wonderful there, really. Very hard. Very hard. Hard drill masters and that. But it was good. When I say good, I mean I'm all for the army, I think. Yeah, they've got respect for the army because they always have to pick up the pieces, don't they? And I respect the other services, but the army, to me, is the lowest of the low, you know. We were the lowest. And well, what they did and what they had to do, they did it, didn't they?
Did the people in charge of the training treat, how did they treat you?
Pretty good, but pretty severe. I mean, discipline. Discipline was hard, but good, fair. Yeah, I had no complaints at all. As I say, the sergeants, the drill sergeants, were mainly a lot of being in the First War, or even pre-war army. So they were experienced men, obviously, soldiers. So they knocked us into shape. And after 3 months, when we left there, I was there for 3 months, they turned out some not so bad soldiers, you know.
Were you able to do the things they asked you to do?
Do what they...
On the training, were you able to cope with what they asked you to do?
Easy. I found it easy. Don't misunderstand me. What I mean is that we all did it their way, but it didn't come hard to me. I was interested, and I liked being in the army.
What was the next thing you remember?
Well, posted to field artillery on the Salisbury Plain. I went to Clacton on sea first, only for 3 weeks or so, and then we went under canvas on the Salisbury Plain for several months in the summer, and did manoeuvres and all that thing there, gunnery and so forth. And then we progressed from there and went to a place called Clevedon in Somerset near Bristol. Nice place. And but they split the regiment I was joined up with in the West Somerset Yeomanry. That's the regiment I went to from the training. And they split us up and made other regiments. I went to another brand new regiment. And that was Field Artillery Field Regiment.
Which unit did you go to after West Somerset Yeomanry?
The 192nd Field Artillery Field Regiment.
Where did you find them?
At Clevedon in Somerset. Around the Bristol area we were, the regiment was forming.
What were they equipped with, the 192nd?
They were 25-pounders.
What did you think of the 25-pounders?
They're the best gun in the world. And the British artillery are the best in the world. The German mortar men are the best in the world. The best artillery is the British 25-pounders. And the men with it. Beat anybody.
And what jobs were you trained for on the 25-pounder?
I was in the OP with the officer, a wireless operator, with the forward position. You know, in the artillery, they go forward, don't they, to bring the guns down onto the objective with the infantry.
And then, what do you remember next?
Well, then, as time went on, about 8 months before D-Day, we split again. And several of us, we were all posted to different places, and I went to the anti-tank, the 62nd, which was obviously that for the invasion.
What kind of equipment did the anti-tank unit have?
We had, I've been in here, as you see, the M10 Mark 10, Sherman Mark 10s, 17-pounder.
And what was your job in the M10?
I was a driver operator, which I drove the tank, and we took it in turns because we had to know everybody else's job. That's rather obvious, isn't it?
What were the main problems with driving an M10?
Well, you had levers, you know. You didn't have a wheel. You drive them by levers, and they were not too bad to drive at all, really. Occasionally, if you got on a certain muddy ground, you would skid. If you locked a bit hard or something like that, you might skid a bit, but they weren't too bad.
What would be the speed you'd normally drive those at?
Well, you could do 30 miles an hour on them, which is quite fast if you take a 30-ton tank, which it was 30 tons. You can do about 30 miles an hour, more or less, maybe more.
What are these? You've shown me a photograph of one. What are these things strapped to
well,
the
Well, they're baggage, they're stuff, equipment and stuff, and the other things on the side are for the tracks, in case you have to repair your track. The parts, the rubbery parts, because they're American tanks, aren't they? Not British. And the rubber sections, in case others came loose or you lost them in the conditions you were in. And but you'd have more than that on the side as well. In other, you know, that was only part of. There'd be other equipment on the side and your own personal stuff that you could get, because you're very limited room inside, weren't you? You know, I mean, any tank is, you've only got so much room.
So this is the period just before D-Day. What memories have you got of the build-up?
Well, the build-up, when it got nearer, we went to these holding camps on the coast, Southampton, and some went to Tilbury. These holding camps where once you were in, you just couldn't get out. They were tented places, and they had armed guards. So nobody could get out. You were, once you were there, you were there. Next stop would be Normandy. And as I say, on the 5th, sailed on the 5th, the regiment, and landed on the 6th in the afternoon with the Canadian, the Regina Rifles, the Winnipegs, Canadian Scottish, and all those outfits.
What was your channel crossing like?
Pretty rough. Storm on the 5th. Storm, very inclement weather. Eisenhower was a bit unsure what to do. As you know, he took advice from his weather forecaster. And he decided to go on the 6th.
What kind of craft did he go across in?
Tank landing craft, quite sizable things to hold so many tanks.
Were you seasick yourself?
No, I was all right. Some were, but no, I got okay. And that thing that the battleships and the heavy cruisers and destroyers of it were slamming in to the German positions and that. The vibration, you know, on the water. I mean, a massive noise. Noise is massive, isn't it? You get big battleships with their 15-inch guns. They make a noise, and also the cruisers and all those things. Remember that, things like that.
Were you sitting in your M10 as you crossed?
Not all the time, but when the time came, yes. In you know, you and then the flap goes down, landing. But goes down and you go, and because you're waterproofed, obviously, so the water don't get in your water, hopefully. But our CO, he was in a half track, it sank and went down, and I think he managed to get out, but he lost all his equipment and stuff and what he needed, and several tanks overall went down into the soft sand. Others, we were okay, and of course the dead infantry and in the water. Yeah.
And how deep was the water that you went into, do you think?
I think about, where we managed to get through, about 4 feet, I suppose. You know, not too bad, but some, depending on how they managed to get in, some were deep, and of course they were too deep, you know, probably flooded their engines and they were out, you know. And of course of everything that was going on around them, well, the situation wasn't very good for them, you know. To get out was dangerous, to stay in was dangerous.
Did water get into your intake?
No, fortunately we were okay. We worked out right for us, and it did for others than that, but some it didn't. And so forth, but the main thing was to get on land and to get to help those infantry boys. And,
do you remember the names of the other people in your M10?
Yeah, well, Sergeant New. I think he's dead now. Gerwood, Jerry Gerwood, his name was. I think he's gone now. And then we had replacements when we took a beating. And so they were the only two that I could say.